This is the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. We are here every week at this time. Here's where we look at what's going on around the world, economically speaking, interpret it, and help you figure out what's going to happen to your nest egg. How do you manage your nest egg in light of the economic facts and circumstances that exist? Today, as a means to that end, I have special guest Mr. Ian Gordon of the Long Wave Group joining me once again. It's been about a year since Mr. Gordon's been on the program. He's done a lot of work in his career studying economic cycles historically, and it's always a real treat to have Mr. Gordon on the program. So Ian will be joining me just momentarily. I want to remind you also, if you've not yet attended our new retirement rules class, we have a class coming up on May the 16th, which is a Saturday. It will be held at the downtown campus of Western Michigan University. The class begins at 9 o'clock a.m. It concludes at 2:30 p.m. You can get more information on the class by visiting the website, newretirementrules.com. The cost for the class is just $49. That covers the cost of you and a guest for lunch, the book, all the handouts. Parking is taken care of downtown, so your only out-of-pocket cost is $49. If you're looking to educate yourself, if you're looking to get a perspective based on macroeconomic cycles, if you're looking to get a perspective other than the perspective you might get from a mainstream broker, which tends to take a one-bucket approach, which we talk about at the class, I'd encourage you to check it out. It's all about education, and it is reasonably priced. So again, the website is newretirementrules.com to check it out. And if you'd like to listen to any of our interviews with guest experts again, or if you happen to miss the program, the Everything Financial Radio program is actually produced into two podcasts each week. You can get those for free by going to the iTunes store and searching under Everything Financial Radio. Or you can visit the website, everythingfinancialradio.com, and re-listen to any of the interviews with our guest experts. I'm very pleased to have back on the Everything Financial Radio program returning guest Mr. Ian Gordon. Mr. Gordon is a globally known economic forecaster, author, and speaker. He's also founder and chairman of the Long Wave Group. You can check out his work at thelongwavegroup.com, and I would encourage you to do so. And Ian, it's been a while, but always a pleasure to have you on the program. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much for having me back.
Ian, let's just jump in a little bit, because you had talked last time you were on the program that you believe the outlook globally will lead to deflation. It's been 9 or 10 months since we've talked. Europe has engaged in their version of quantitative easing. The Fed has tapered. There's talk of deflation in some countries. The Chinese central bank's now warning of deflation. Singapore is experiencing deflation. We're starting to see that. So is this the beginning of what you had forecast?
Well, it is and it isn't. Actually, in some ways, my view has sort of been altered somewhat by what I see as the threat of sort of currency collapse. Because if your currency collapses, and a good example, let's say, is in the Ukraine, then you don't have deflation, you have a massive inflation, because the value of a currency falls to so dramatically that everything that you have to purchase in that currency gets increasingly expensive. So what we're seeing right now, as I see it, is the threat of failure of paper currencies, and I believe that's on a worldwide scale. So that if the paper, for instance, let's just take Greece as an example. It certainly appears that Greece is very close to exiting the euro, either through its own choice or by the European country's choice. And when that happens, Greece will have to return to the drachma as its currency. And that will mean that the value of the drachma will drop dramatically against the euro. And that means that everything that has to be paid for in drachmas is going to be very expensive, so that you're going to have a fairly high inflation in Greece. And it This really applies to any country whose currency, paper currency, fails. And I think ultimately, and throughout history, we know that this has been the case, all paper currencies are going to fail. So that right now we're in the sort of the throes of a deflationary kind of era, but I think that we could have massive inflation as currencies fail.
And Ian, let me ask this, because you go back and look at Weimar Germany, there's other examples historically that when currencies fail, up to that point there's massive inflations or hyperinflations, but then it seems that the debt that caused the deflation to start with just gets recalibrated to some other currency and you see deflation following the inflation. Would you agree with that view?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I do, and I'm not sure that I don't, because I've never really sort of worked it through, you know, to the final outcome. Because really, what I see, Dennis, is what's occurring is that the whole world monetary system is basically starting to be restructured, and that restructure is sort of occurring under the Chinese leadership, with Russia playing, you know, being a bit player in that regard as well. And, you know, the Chinese have just set out the AIIB bank, which is a sort of a counterpart to the IMF, which, of course, the IMF is effectively a U.S.-led bank. And the AIIB will be not led by China, because China doesn't want to have a veto in that institution as the U.S. does in the IMF. But we're seeing this with the BRICS currencies, you know, that how they're all aligned with each other, how China is starting to make bilateral monetary deals with countries that she trades with, and so on. So that slowly what we're seeing is a new currency, a world monetary reset. And actually, and I've written about this, that effectively in all of these long wave winters, there's always been a monetary reset that has occurred in each of the long wave winters. And of course, in the previous long wave winter, the world monetary system was based on gold, and that collapsed between 1931 and 33. So what I see here, Dennis, is that the new monetary system that is evolving under the Chinese sort of guidance is probably going to be a return to some sort of a gold standard system. And, you know, we know that China and Russia have both been amassing huge amounts of gold. We don't know how much gold the Chinese have. They're not reporting on how much they have, but I've seen some people sort of refer to the Chinese gold holding as in excess of 20,000 tons. I mean, that's a huge amount. The America purports to have about 8,300 tons, and I suspect that that's not the case anymore. But if that's the case, then China could come out with Russia, and suggesting that their currencies are now gold-backed, which would force a reset for everybody else, would have to come back to that standard as well, simply because if you couldn't go back your currency would be deemed worthless, and no one would want to be paid in it.
So, Ian, we have 2.5 minutes or so left in this segment. Take somebody listening to this interview, and you talk about a currency reset. That's kind of a scary thing to consider and talk about. How would our average listener be affected when that happens?
Well, again, what I'm saying is that if the Chinese and the Russians decide that their currencies are going to be backed by gold, and I think they are moving in that direction just simply because of the amount of gold that they're acquiring. If the country that you live in doesn't have the gold to back their currency, they're going to have to get it, because effectively that currency is going to be deemed worthless for external trade purposes, because people won't want to, you know, take on the paper currency. They want the gold backing. And if that's the case, then we're going to see that sort of massive inflation occurring in any country that can't support its currency with gold. So that's you know, one has to wonder, you know, whether the U.S. does have the 8,300 tons to support its currency. I really don't believe that she does. And if she doesn't, then she's going to have to get gold to back the dollar.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there in this segment. Our guest today is Mr. Ian Gordon. He is the founder and chairman of the Longwave Group. And we'll continue our conversation with Ian when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in today. You know, in this segment, I want to talk about what's going on in the country of Greece. Greece's economic situation, the debt situation in Greece, is the big topic of conversation in world economic circles today. In fact, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank just completed an annual meeting in Washington, D.C., and that was the big topic of conversation there as well. Now, you might be wondering, why am I talking about what's going on in Greece when it may seem that that won't affect you? Well, it will potentially affect you given what's going on, and there's a lesson we can learn from what's going on in Greece, and it may help us understand the future direction of the U.S. economy and U.S. markets as well. So, let me jump in. I want to share with you an article that was published in IB Times. And the article said that Greece's economic crisis Saturday dominated the discussion of at the International Monetary Fund and World Bank's annual meeting in Washington, with European Central Bank President Mario Draghi warning that the situation is urgent. However, concerns about Greece falling out of the euro dominated discussions from the get-go, with attendees from all over the world expressing concern about the impact of Greece's increasingly fragile economy. Draghi, and that is European Central Bank President Mario Draghi, stated that we all want Greece to succeed. The answer is in the hands of the Greek government. Much more work is needed now, and it is urgent, Draghi said. Now, at the top of the discussion about Greece's situation was debt repayments that Greece, they'll be required to make next month, and there is quite a big repayment schedule. The first installment is due next month, and it's a U.S. equivalent of $347 billion. I'll put that in perspective in just a moment. Now, bottom line is that people don't know exactly what Greece's finances look like, but the rumor is, and the rumor circulating at this meeting is, that if Greece makes the installment, they'll be out of money. They'll be unable to pay for welfare bills. They'll be unable to pay public sector wages, which would be any government employee would not get paid. And Greece's financial instability has led a lot of economic experts and commentators to speculate the country may fall out of the euro currency. And that would leave Europe open to the same financial turmoil it faced during the global financial crisis of 2007 and 2008. Now, Greece's finance minister said that there had been some progress in formulating a well-functioning policy dialogue between Greece and its lenders, which are the European Union Commission, the European Central Bank, and the IMF. The finance minister did say, however, that Greece wanted creditors to slim down their list of demands. In other words, Greece is asking to pay less. Now, U.S. Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew said during a speech to the IMF Steering Committee that a default on Greece's loan debt would create an immediate hardship for the country and damage the global economy. The reason it would damage the global economy is that Greece would simply be the first and smallest domino to fall. Italy, Spain, and Portugal are all in similar financial shape. Now, let me take a minute to just explain to you why this is important to understand. See, in Greece, politicians have two choices. Policymakers have two choices when it comes to paying bills. They can either cut spending, in other words, they could ask all public sector employees to take a pay cut, or they can raise taxes. They've done some of each. They do not have the ability to print money. If you look at the country of Japan or the country of the United States, policymakers and politicians have three choices. They can raise taxes, they can cut spending, or they can print money. Well, certainly that's what a lot of the world's central banks and in many large countries have been doing really since the financial crisis. They have been printing money. Well, if you can't print money, deflation and economic hardship are really, it's really the only possible outcome. And Greece has been experiencing that really since the financial crisis. Greece has been going through the equivalent of what the United States did in the 30s, a Great Depression. Their economic output has been declining. Well, one of the problems with declining economic output is that tax revenue also falls. So it's a cycle that feeds on itself. When economic output declines, tax revenue declines, and more budget cuts are required in order to bring the budget back into balance. Those budget cuts cause the economy to contract, which cause tax revenue to drop, which requires more cuts in spending. Well, to this point, Greece has been getting loans, which are the equivalent of really putting a Band-Aid on the problem, but the debt is still there, and now it's time for Greece to repay the debt. Now, interestingly, when you look at how financial systems work worldwide, when you look at how money works worldwide, 95% of money today, or I should say more than 95% of money, is debt. Now, that means that less than 5% is actually currency. Well, when you look at worldwide what debt levels are, there's simply too much debt to possibly pay. If there's too much debt to possibly pay, then some of the debt won't get paid. And since over 95% of money is debt, what does that mean? That means the money supply contracts. Well, countries have been printing in some parts of the world to stave off deflation, but that hasn't been the case in Greece. They don't have that option. They can't print euros because they don't control the euro printing press. So what's actually happening here is that Greece, if they're forced out of the euro or elect to leave the euro, which there will be a lot of economic fallout, there'll be a lot of economic consequences to them making that decision or being forced to make that decision, which we'll talk about in the next segment. But if you just take a look at what Greece is actually considering, they want to be able to go back and print money. They don't have that option now, so they would go back to the drachma and they would print money, which would simply devalue their currency, and they would have an inflation or maybe even a massive inflation as opposed to the deflation that they're now experiencing. Now, just to give you an example and put this in perspective, let's compare Greece and Japan for a minute. If you take a look at the debt, the government debt that each of these countries has, Japan has more debt than Greece as a percentage of their economy. That's measured by using something called a debt-to-GDP ratio, debt-to-gross domestic product. And really what that does is it measures a country's debt compared to its economic output. In other words, what is a country borrowing divided by what it's bringing in? The higher the ratio, the more difficult it will be for the country to repay its debts. Japan has a higher debt-to-GDP ratio than Greece. Yet, Japan has something called a central bank that can print yen. That's what they've been doing. They have been experiencing a muddle-through economy, not deflation like Greece has, but deflation keeps rearing its head in Japan. And Japan has created a different problem. Not only have they had deflation in wages and real estate, they've had inflation in things that they import, like food and fuel. So it creates a different set of economic problems, and Greece now is considering trading one set of economic problems for another. Now, interestingly, here in the United States, and here's why this is important to you, policymakers and politicians have the same three choices as those in Japan. They can tax, they can cut spending, or they can print money, and they've elected to print money. But here's the point. Printing money does not make the debt go away. Sooner or later, you have to deal with a debt, and that's when financial markets will be affected and potentially your nest egg as well. If you'd like to learn more about these economic cycles and debt-to-GDP ratios and strategies you might consider in your own personal financial situation, I'd like to invite you to visit the website newretirementrules.com. You can sign up there for our next New Retirement Rules class, which will be held on May the 16th. That's a Saturday. There is capacity yet at that class. You can get information again at newretirementrules.com or sign up while capacity remains. We'll return after these words. Stay with us.
Give me your money. Just give me money.
Monday, Monday, Monday. Always Sunday. In the rich man's world.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen, and I'm chatting today with a longtime friend of the program, Mr. Ian Gordon. If you're just joining us, Mr. Gordon is a worldwide known economic forecaster, author, and speaker. He's founder and chairman of the Long Wave Group. I would encourage you to check out his work at thelongwavegroup.com. And Ian, I want to pick this up where we left it off in a prior segment. You had mentioned that you believe that both China and Russia are accumulating massive amounts of gold with the idea that at some point their currencies will be backed by gold. And certainly there's some evidence that there's gold-backed trade notes that Russia and China are using. What does this mean for the future of gold as far as value or pricing is concerned?
Well, obviously it's very bullish. You know, for the price of gold, because simply, you know, if you back your currencies with gold, the amount of currency that you've issued, you have to have sufficient gold to sort of support the amount of currency that you've issued. You know, when the British pound was gold-backed after the Napoleonic Wars, after 1815, I think that the pound was backed by about 40% gold ownership. I mean, you don't have to have 100%, but you've got to have sufficient that people sort of say, you know, I don't mind using paper currency, because I know that if I start to fear that they're inflating this paper currency, I can always turn it in and get gold in exchange for that. So you have to have sufficient. So that means that, you know, if we do start to sort of gravitate back towards a gold-backed world monetary system, then countries will have to have sufficient gold backing for that currency to give people confidence that in the currency. So that means that there's going to be, you know, the price of gold has to be significantly higher than it is right now to accommodate all these gold-backed currencies.
Ian, what would you say to someone who says, you know, I've felt that gold should be doing very well, but when you take a look at the recent performance of gold, certainly in the last 5 or 6 months, it's been in a trading range, the price has been consolidating, and it's, you know, as we record this, around $1,200 an ounce, down from a high of $1,900. So how would you answer those who are skeptical? I've had guests on the program that say gold's going to go to $700 an ounce before it goes up.
Well, I would say I think there's no chance that we're going to see $700 an ounce, and I would say that even $1,200 an ounce is somewhat, you know, I suspect that it's somewhat sort of, how are we going to put this sort of nicely, you know, that the price is somewhat controlled, and it's being controlled through the COMEX. I mean, you know, gold, the price of gold is an effective barometer or thermometer or measure of the currencies, and in particular the dollar, because the dollar is the U.S. dollar is the world's reserve currency. So, you know, if the price of gold is going sky high, that's a reflection that people are very concerned about the paper currencies and particularly concerned about the dollar. So, I think the price has been managed in the COMEX. We've seen some dramatic sells, you know, where huge amounts of gold have been just sort of thrown onto the market in short order just to force the price down. And this has occurred frequently over the past few years. And one of the things that I really feel that people should sort of take note of is that there's a constant ongoing battle being waged between paper and gold. And right now, paper's winning that battle. That's reflected in the price of stocks and so on. And gold is losing the battle, which is reflected in its price at $1,200 an ounce. And the Dow, you know, almost at record highs. So I think we're going to see a complete reversal. The whole, we're starting to see the cracks in the paper currencies. We're seeing real issues with Greece, and if Greece exits the euro, one can suggest that it will be just the first of the currencies that will be exiting the euro. I think Italy would certainly be in line to sort of follow Greece out of the euro, and maybe Spain and so on. So that means that effectively the currency, the euro, the currency itself is in a state of collapse. And that's going to put pressure, too, I think, on the dollar because of the huge debts that, the U.S. is carrying, like $18-plus trillion. So the paper currency system, as I said in the first segment, I think is in a state of disarray here. And when it starts its collapse, gold is going to go. People are going to rush to gold because they're going to fear for the collapse of paper money.
So, Ian, based upon that forecast, is it fair to ask you timing? Do you think we're going to see this the new gold bull market run start this year, or what's your take?
I'm absolutely convinced it's going to start this year, and I'm convinced that when it does start, it's going to start fairly. No bull market starts with a rush, but I think the run to gold will start to become quite significant, and I think that run it will start, I would say, within the next 2, 3, 4 months. And when that run occurs, it's occurring because paper is collapsing. That's why people go to gold. It's going to gold because they fear for the paper collapse.
So
that means basically if the paper collapse happens, stock markets are going to collapse because they're basically funded by paper.
That's exactly where I was going to go. What is your ultimate forecast for gold and for stocks? And we've been using the Dow as our metric. So let's talk about your forecast for gold and for the Dow.
I think this next downturn in the market, there'll be no holding it back. I mean, every time we've had a down in the U.S. stock market, basically the Federal Reserve has intervened and got the market back, either through interest rate policy and also monetary policy, flooding the banks with money. That happened after 2000 to 2002 when the Dow dropped 50%, and then the Federal Reserve bought it back by lowering interest rates. It happened between 2000 and after 2009 when interest rates were effectively brought down to zero and there's money poured into the bank through all sorts of quantitative easing and different programs. So this time around, the Fed doesn't have the interest rate of, attack available to it to sort of hold back the deluge in stocks because interest rates are effectively at zero. And it's going to be very difficult to flood the banks with money because money, will effectively start to be deemed as worthless paper money. So I really feel that this stock market, the Dow, I've always forecast the Dow will eventually go to about 1,000, and I stick to that forecast. And the reason I pick 1,000 is that the Dow tried to get through 1,000 from 1966 to 1982 11 times, and it, 1,000 was a sticking point. So that was a resistance point, and resistance points on charts become support points. So that 1,000 was a very, very big number for the Dow, and it finally penetrated late in 1982. So I say that, and then gold, I don't know, I think... Ultimately, I don't think if you want physical gold, I don't know if it'll be obtainable at any price because it's so rare and it's going to be very difficult to get because everybody's going to be scrambling to get it. But I've often said that I envisage a price of about 4,000. But with paper values collapsing, it could be significantly higher than that. We're pricing it in paper, so it could be significantly higher than 4,000.
So, Ian, what is your take on what's been going on in the currency markets? We've seen so much volatility. The U.S. dollar's been very strong over the last 6 or 7 months, but we're seeing price swings of 2 and 3% per week when you measured against other currencies using the dollar index. Is all that volatility kind of a precursor to this failure in paper currency that you're predicting?
I really believe it is, Dennis. I think that's a very, very good observation. That what it's telling us is there's just so much uncertainty. Where do we go? Which currency is, which currency is viable? Where do we put our money? People are paying to buy government bonds. German bonds are negative interest rates. Swiss bonds are negative interest rates. It means you're paying to buy those bonds. I think what that means is that these bonds are being basically taken out of circulation and stored, as simply as a value, because they are, they're a measure of the current of the country's value. And so people, just as people are probably starting to hoard cash. I wouldn't be hoarding cash, because I think cash is, could be almost worthless. I think smart people are certainly hoarding gold.
Well, Ian, we've got just a couple minutes left in this segment. Tell the listeners about your work and how they could learn more.
Well, the website, longwavegroup.com, it's a free website, and there's a lot of I think good information on it. The long wave is simply a cycle, an economic cycle that's based on the Kondratiev long wave cycle. Nikolai Kondratiev, the Russian economist, developed that cycle in the 1920s. And basically what we've been able to do is sort of, I think, take it much further than Nikolai Kondratiev had ever envisaged. And I think one of the big things that we've been able to do is to show that it's actually an investment cycle that occurs within this long wave cycle. And the most important feature of that investment cycle is that gold and the stock market always work opposite to each other. And that, if one understands that, it's basically very easy to make, appropriate investment decisions. Yes, this should be a very strong time for gold within the long wave seasons, because we are in the winter, the payback, when the debt is wrung out of the economy. That strength in gold has been held back since 2011, but it will, as I've said earlier in the program, I'm absolutely convinced that the strength in gold will return, and it will return with a vengeance. And the weakness in stocks, similar to the weakness that was experienced between 1929 and 1932, will return, and that will return with a vengeance.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Ian Gordon. The website is longwavegroup.com. I would encourage you to check it out. And Ian, thanks for joining us today, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
We will return after these words. Stay with us. This is Everything Financial Radio. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Thanks for listening in today. We're talking this week about what's going on in Europe, in particular, what's going on with the country of Greece, and what it might mean for you and your money. And to begin this segment, I want to again give you some background information about how actually money works. And it's really critical to understand this concept in order to understand what's going on in Europe. You know, over 95% of today's money is debt. So less than 5% is currency, the coins and the bills that people worldwide carry around in their purses or wallets. So if over 95% of money is debt, and there's too much debt to be paid, when debt actually goes unpaid, that's a default on debt, and that means that money disappears from the financial system. We like to say it goes to money heaven. Give you an example. Let's say that you make a loan to someone. Say the loan is $50,000. You intend to collect interest on the loan, and you intend to be fully repaid on the loan at some future date. Well, if all of a sudden you find that you're not going to get repaid, that's $50,000 that disappears from your personal financial statement. That's $50,000 that goes to money heaven, and the money supply contracts. When the money supply contracts, you get deflation. In fact, that's the textbook definition of deflation, is a contraction of the money supply. Inflation is the polar opposite of deflation. Inflation is an expansion of the money supply. Well, if you look at what's happened in Greece, Greece has been experiencing severe deflation. Greece has been experiencing a significant contraction in the money supply. Why? Well, Greece cannot print money. They're part of the Eurozone. They don't control the printing press to be able to print euros. That's not true in countries like Japan and the United States. In a prior segment, we compared the countries of Japan and Greece, and even though Greece has been experiencing a deflationary depression since the financial crisis, Japan's economy could be described a bit more as a muddle-through economy. There's some inflation in food and fuel because they're devaluing the currency through money printing, and yet we're seeing deflation in wages and in real estate. So Japan has not been able to avoid deflation, but by devaluing their currency, they have been able to lessen the symptoms significantly. So Greece is actually in a situation where they may be forced out of the Eurozone, which would create some significant consequences, and those consequences not only would affect us here in the United States, but we might be seeing a preview of what's happening in other parts of the world, and perhaps, in our view, even the United States. There was an article published in the Chicago Tribune this past week on April the 20th, written by Mohammed El-Arain, who is formerly with PIMCO. Well, the article was titled The 11 Acts in Greece's Economic Drama. And Mr. El-Arain writes this: with negotiations faltering, the rhetoric intensifying, and a daunting payment schedule ahead, there's mounting concern that the latest disagreement over Greece may be more than just another stage in the prolonged, repeated game involving the country's debt drama. The worry is that this time, a ghastly set of circumstances is coming together to form an inevitable reality, that of Greece being ejected from the Eurozone. And then Mr. El-Arain lists some things that you need to know about Greece's fiscal odyssey. He said the first thing you need to know is that what's making this scenario seem more plausible is the simple fact that Greece is rapidly running out of money. A situation so dire that the unthinkable is on the table. A default on obligations to the International Monetary Fund, one of the world's few preferred creditors. Well, the bottom line is this: if there's too much debt to be paid, it won't be paid. Here on the Everything Financial Radio program, when we talked about the city of Detroit's bankruptcy, and we listened to the debate that was going on, will state law trump federal law? Will the pensions be protected? The bottom line was that as tragic as the Detroit situation was for those receiving pensions from the city, if there's not enough money in the checkbook to make the payments won't be made. If there's too much debt to be paid, it simply won't be paid. And if debt doesn't get paid, that means that money disappears from the financial system and there is deflation. Mr. El-Arain writes, with such an outcome becoming more than just thinkable, the walk away from the Greek financial assets has turned into a jog that could be on the verge of turning into a run. For some of the structural holders of Greek debt, such as foreign subsidiaries of Greek banks, have been exiting their holdings. People are getting rid of Greek debt. They don't want to hold it because it might not be good. They don't want to have their money disappear from the financial system. And this argument is really about whose money is going to disappear. There's not enough money to pay all the debt. Greece is in a situation they can't possibly pay the debt. So the question is, who's going to take the hit? Meanwhile, Mr. Ellerain writes, withdrawals of bank deposits are probably accelerating. This after large amounts have already fled the Greek banking system. Well, here is the danger. Banks hold Greek debt as assets. A default means that banks lose assets and banks become insolvent. And some of the things that can happen if banks become insolvent, number one, you can have bailouts, like we saw in the United States during the financial crisis. Two, you can have bail-ins, like we saw in Cyprus a couple years ago, where if you had money in the bank, you simply lost some of the money. And of course, back in the 1930s, when the same situation occurred, we had bank holidays. President Franklin Roosevelt declared a bank holiday, which meant that banks were relieved of any obligation to pay their depositors. Mr. Ellerain says the result is to suck more oxygen from an economy that's already struggling mightily. It also worsens dependence on emergency lending from an already hesitant European Central Bank system, which misses no opportunity to say that such funding isn't intended to repeatedly fill gaps created by others, especially because the ECB has been Greece's only large official financier for quite a while. Well, the lesson here is this. Debt problems can't be solved by adding more debt, and that's the approach that has been taken to this particular problem. Mr. Ellerain continues to write that the solution is policy reforms by Greece, which simply means they've got to spend less, which means public sector employees and welfare recipients and those getting a check from the government are not going to be happy. Second component of the solution, according to Mr. Ellerain, immediate funding from creditors. They need more money. Additional debt reduction, which means if Greece doesn't come up with the money, somebody has to take the hit. And easing some of the demands for budgetary austerity. In other words, don't make Greece cut so much. Well, the bottom line is this. When you do the math, it simply points out the fact that the inevitable conclusion, in my view, is that somebody is not going to get paid. Well, Mr. Ellerain says that putting this all together, and it's a rather lengthy article, but he said that, in his view, there's a 45% chance that there will be a last-minute messy compromise that allows the muddling through to continue. He said there's a 10% chance that a meaningful policy breakthrough will be achieved, and he said there's a 45% chance that Greece exits the euro. If that happens, Greeks will default on debt, there will be bank runs, and there will be the imposition of capital controls, as Mr. Ellerain predicts. And if there are capital controls, that just means if there's not enough money in the banks, there's not enough money for you to get all your money out of the bank, they simply ration it out. That's what's been going on in Cyprus for quite some time. Now, this outcome is only possible when there's no money printing. So we talk about this at our New Retirement Rules class. I would invite you to go to the website newretirementrules.com to get more information or register while capacity remains. The website, again, newretirementrules.com. That's our program. Hope you enjoyed it and got something you can use. Bye.